You can look at that. Push your button.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. So I'll call us to order at 6 o'clock. So I'm going to call us to order for this Drainage District Trustee meeting, and we're talking about Grant 5. We're going to really take our time tonight, so I hope everybody had a chance to eat a hearty dinner and you got some sustenance. There's a water fountain right out in the hallway. There's a bathroom just on the other side of the elevators. Please come and go as you see fit. Like I said, we're really going to try to take this one step at a time. This is a big, big deal. And we want everybody to feel like they got all the information and you had a chance to be heard. But we're going to follow a process in getting to that. So let's start with introductions of county staff and the people that are here tonight. I'm Rick Sanders, and I'm chair of the Board of Supervisors. And by that role, I also serve as chair of the Drainage District Trustees for Grant 5. And we'll talk about how we became Drainage District Trustees for Grant 5 here in just a minute. Laura, can you introduce yourself?
I'm Laura Solson, supervisor and trustee.
Marty?
Marty Chitty, supervisor and trustee.
Scott Wall over here is our drainage district clerk. He's the best in the business. He has all the details of all our drainage districts going back 100, 110 years, and we count on him for a lot. Darren, raise your hand. Darren, this is Darren Moon, our county engineer. He's here tonight. We're going to hear from our friends from Kent and Tyler here in just a minute from Bolton Inc. who have prepared this report. But let's start with this. So when we started talking through what this was going to look like, and you can see we brought in a lot of extra chairs, I think we're right at our maximum occupancy. So if the fire marshal comes, it's Loris's fault. So we'll send Loris with the fire marshal. But we're at maximum capacity. But when we started talking through how this meeting was going to go tonight, we wanted to make sure that you as the landowners, and so we're making a general assumption, maybe not everybody here is a landowner in Grant 5, but we're going to make an assumption that you guys are landowners in Grant 5. We want to talk through what your rights and opportunities are as we go through this process. And so to that end, I picked up the phone today, and I called our county attorney, Jessica Reynolds, and I said, County Attorney Reynolds, we probably need to have somebody from your office at this meeting tonight just to talk us through what drainage district law, how this works, what the landowners can do if they want to form their own trustees, if they want to do anything along there. And Jessica, being who she is, and I want you guys to be aware of this, since she represents all of you, Jessica being who she has 15 attorneys working for her in the office. They're trying a couple murder cases and some capital cases, and she's working a ton of hours. But instead of sending somebody else tonight, Jessica decided she'd come do this herself. So this is County Attorney Jessica Reynolds. And Jessica, my first question for you is, so we serve as the Drainage District Trustees by being the Board of Supervisors. Grant 5 has never elected their own trustees, so the Board of Supervisors have served in that capacity. What if this group of people wanted to elect their own trustees? What would happen?
Well, good evening, everyone. I am Jessica Reynolds, the Story County Attorney, and thank you for that kind introduction. That was very kind of Chairman Sanders. I'm happy to be here tonight. One of the things I always like to tell everyone is that when people run for the Board of Supervisors, we never let them know that they're going to be Drainage District Trustees. That's one of those, like, icky little secrets they find out after they get into office. So I really appreciate our Board of Supervisors works really hard as Drainage District Trustees, and including your Drainage District. But it's a great question. So Iowa Code does provide for Drainage District trustees to be formed on their own. And basically what you need to do under Iowa Code, if you want to look at it yourself, it's Iowa Code section 468.500. What you would need to do is a majority of landowners in your district would need to petition the Board of Supervisors to take over that trusteeship. And if you do that, if you get, so it's 51%, majority of you, that would sign that and petition the Board of Supervisors, then we'd actually hold an election for three trustees to take over instead of the Board of Supervisors. I don't think you'd hurt their feelings, although I can't speak for them. I don't think that would upset them. And then what would happen is the trustees would be responsible for all of the obligations in Iowa Code Section 468 regarding the district and the drainage district and those repairs and improvements that we're going to be talking about here tonight.
And the 51%, is that based on property, or is that based on number of landowners?
Number of landowners, signed by a majority of landowners.
Okay. And so the history in Story County, we've got 100-plus drainage districts in Story County. Traditionally, we've had exactly one that has served as their own trustees. Marshall Story 1 served as their own trustees for 50 years or so, Scott. For about 50 years, and about 10 years ago, they decided, no, we don't want to do it. We want people to be mad at the Board of Supervisors. We don't want people to be mad at us. So they turned it back over to us, and we immediately had a really large project that we had to do because they had put everything off down the road. So that's the process if you want to go through it. So I had a question as I was coming through trying to introduce myself to as many of you as I could and thanking you for being here. But one of the questions was, well, do the landowners get to decide on anything we do going forward? And the answer is not directly. The trustees will decide how we go forward, and we're bound by state law. Our state law tells us that as trustees, we must maintain the district to original specifications. Is that right, Kent? Did I say it right?
That's original condition.
To original condition. That's what the state law tells us. Now, we're talking about more than that here tonight for a lot of reasons. We're not bound to do any of that. We're really going to want your input, but it's important that you know it's not as simple as we're going to do a show of hands at the end of the night and the majority carries the day. It is a full conversation of trying to figure out what's in the best interest of Grant 5 and what we're bound by. Is there other legal matters that we need to lay out up top?
No.
Okay. Yeah, question. Yes, sir.
NRCS won't let me expand and improve the tile on my mutual tile near Grant 5. How can you change the tile in Grant 5?
Ken, you want to take a quick swipe at that, or are you going to hit that in your presentation?
We'll go through some of that, yeah.
Okay, so hold that. If we don't answer it during the night, we'll come back to it at the end of the night and make sure we got it. Anything else, and specifically in regards to your rights as landowners, the legal matter. So what we're going to go to from this is we're going to go to the full presentation, and then we'll come back with comments and discussion after we get the full presentation. But what I want everybody to feel like they understand what your legal rights are here tonight. Are there any questions along those lines? So I'd love for County Attorney Reynolds to stay all night, but I don't want her to have to stay all night. Are there any questions for her while she's here?
Marty, is this on? Yeah, there we go. Rick, I just wanted to add one more thing about the rights of the landowners. Landowners do have the right to object to any improvement that might be proposed, and through that objection, there's a right of remonstrance that can be counted, and that would be counted by majority of landowners owning at least 70% of the land have to object to a decision by the board for an improvement, and those objections would have to be received by the end of the hearing. Now, that could be tonight, that could be via a continued hearing. I know we received one objection, I believe, from the previous hearing. That still is valid. But all it has to be done is written on a piece of paper and handed to Scott over there, and it would be valid. So we're going to go through a number of different things tonight. One is a repair, and then improvement. A number of different improvement options. It's going to be somewhat confusing, but we'll get there.
All right. And we have a question for Mr. Jensen.
Does the attorney handle private trustees, or just as the supervisors?
Just as the supervisors. Good question.
So if you have our own trustees, we've got to go find our own legal.
Correct.
Advice.
Yeah, I'm here because the board is my client and they serve as trustees. Good question.
Thanks. Any other legal questions that anybody's thinking of right now that they'd like an answer to? Okay, don't be shy tonight. I have a feeling we're not going to have a problem with that before long. All right, so Kent, we will move into the agenda now, and we're at item number 1 on a 5-item agenda, And this is present amended. So amended engineer's report. Many of you guys were here a year ago when we did the initial report. We had lots of questions. We had lots of great conversation. And what we decided at that point is we wanted to send the engineer back in to look at everything again, look at the annexation of some of the property up on the northwest side, look at the possibility of a second outlet down the west side of the district. And so we sent the engineer away, but we wanted to make sure that we were doing this in the right time frame. So we set a public hearing. Pat, did we set this thing 6 or 8 months ago?
Yeah, we filed the report in, was it February?
Yeah, so we're a year ago we had a meeting. I don't remember it being...
Well, the initial meeting was in March, okay. 22nd of 17.
Okay, so we're right there.
Right.
A year ago, and... So this is the amended engineer's report after we received the first one a year ago to go back in and look at everything again, look at all the possibilities. And Kent, please present the report.
Thanks, Rick. My name is Kent Rohde with Boltman Mank. I'm with me here today, Tyler Connolly. He's also with the firm and has done a lot of work on this report and the preliminary plans that we have here. We're going to go back and forth things I forget, or he just forgets, so I'll let him interject and correct me if I'm wrong. But we do ask that, so I can get through this whole thing, that you kind of hold your questions towards the tail end, so we make sure that we get through the whole process here, the whole report, in a timely manner.
And we'll commit right now, we're going to stay here and listen to every question, and if it starts dragging on too long, we'll continue this thing and we'll come back another night. But we're not going to leave here tonight while you guys still have questions or comments you want to make. This is your property, this is your drainage district, so we're going to get there. So don't feel like you got to just interrupt. Let's let him get through the report.
Well, a little bit of background, kind of touched on it, but Drains District Number 5 was established in 1902. So that's, you know, well over 100 years ago. This is an old district. There was a main open ditch, a main tile. There's three branches and five interior tile districts. Can you guys hear me without this? So it's a big district. There's currently about 8,879 acres on the assessment schedule. We've found that there's a lot more acres than that are benefiting from this main tile and main open ditch. We found that there's 10,788 acres. So if you do some math there, that's 1,909 acres that are receiving benefit but not being assessed, and that's about 22% of the current assessment schedule. So this deal started with a petition from a landowner that wanted some improvements and capacities looked at in the northern part of what I'm going to call the upper watershed, which is those areas, and the map there on the wall, left is north. So imagine that if you can. The interstate is actually running on the bottom of the page there, kind of where the highlighter is. So that's the big area there. Part of that also is the what we call the west watershed. And that was looked at due to conversations at the first hearing. There was interest from landowners in that area that were experiencing some drainage issues. They also recognized that the flows in that upper part of the watershed were flowing both ways, both to the east, currently to that east main tile, and also to the west. There's after pondings and during the bigger flows, that water would divert and go to the west as well as to the east. So that complicates things some. They were looking at some improved drainage. Well, how do we handle this? And we felt the best way to do it would possibly include them in this district and have just two main tile facilities. Now, keep in mind, and I'll go through this later too, that only those people that benefit from the facility would be assessed for any of this work. There will be separate schedules for each of these facilities, and much different than the way it is now. There's one schedule, and that schedule was created in 1924. So if you can imagine back then, people going around and looking at benefit to see which parcel was the most highly benefited, might be riding around on horses saying, well, this guy looked like he should benefit the most. And then they compared everybody else to him and came up with a schedule saying this guy has 50% of the benefit of the main, the highest, and so on. So it was quite a process, and they did very well for that time. Now, of course, we have much better methods and computers and LIDAR data and all that makes that much more easier, but it's still a lot of data, for particularly for a district this size and with over 10,000 acres in it. With that, I guess, I think I'm going to turn it over to Tyler some to talk about some of the investigation we did on the main open ditch and what we found. We separated this whole deal into different sections, and I don't know how many of you had a chance to look at our report, but it was separated into five sections to try and make things easier, and I'll turn this over to Tyler to try and explain that.
Is this picking up?
Is the green light on?
Yeah, green light's on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really close.
If it's all right with everyone, I'm just going to speak from here so I can kind of control the computer and speak on the different sections of the report that we had. Section one is in regard to the existing main open ditch, and that's a little difficult to see on here, but it generally follows this line from north to south. That facility was surveyed and its condition was determined. Now, there was a number of bank slopes, beaver dams, damaged tiles, tile blowouts, silt, and sediment found within that ditch. The survey cross-sections were taken every 400 feet and analyzed up the system. Now, as a repair, as the supervisors touched on, they are legally obligated to keep that facility in proper working conditions. So the conditions to which it was originally constructed, which can be outlined in the preliminary plans of our report. Moving forward from there, we have sections 2 and sections 3, which are the two biggest improvement options in the original report. Section 2 is the proposal for an extended main open ditch in order to cross the existing railroad lines and stop at, I believe, 220th, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Okay, 220th Street.
Tyler, right now, the open ditch goes to Lincoln Highway and then stops there.
Correct,
and
yes.
This would extend it north from Lincoln Highway across the UP up to 220th or 13th Street coming out of Ames, right?
Correct. This option was evaluated because looking at tile capacities and what would be required to construct a system under today's drainage standards, which is based on the Iowa State Extension, which would be a half-inch drainage coefficient. Now, a drainage coefficient is the amount of water that can be removed from a section of land in one day's time. The standard for land that has adequate surface drainage is 1/2 inch per acre per day.
The existing main tile has about 10 to 12% of that. So it is drastically undersized based on today's standards.
So to allow for today's standard drainage coefficient, the size tile that this area would require was such that it is more money friendly, more economically sensible to construct a ditch through this location. Additionally, what that would do is it would provide better drainage through the rail system there, and under the Iowa Code, railways are responsible for surface drainage culverts through their facilities. Tiles, they are not.
Yeah, so let's underscore that point, because it is a relatively big deal. We just used it in another drainage district that we were working on here in Story County. If it's a tile, if we put a new tile, if we repair a tile, if we've got a tile, it is your responsibility as landowners to pay for the upkeep, the installation, the whatever we're doing with one of those tiles. If it's a culvert, it's the railroad's responsibility to pay for that.
Yeah, and obviously an open ditch with a culvert would provide much better, much higher capacity for drainage than a tile. And for a half-inch drainage coefficient, we were figuring a half-inch or 54-inch tile to be comparable. But it certainly is much more cost-effective to use the open ditch. We were also looking at, and after our initial report, well, about when we were presenting last year, the city of Ames annexed a portion of that area into the city, and with plans for an industrial development in that area north of Lincoln Way. So a bigger culvert through Lincoln Way and a deeper ditch through that area, we feel would be advantageous to that area for outletting of culverts and storm sewers that serve that industrial area. Anywhere, any kind you can get a deeper ditch to just for fall is more advantageous. That existing culvert under Lincoln Way is undersized for urban roadway standards. However, it does meet our drainage standards. Drainage standards are a little much less than the roadway standards. They don't allow for overtopping of the roadway. However, drainage allows for that and actually considers ponding in fields for a couple, 3 days, considering that crops can withstand that ponding for that short period of time.
So then moving on to section 3 of the report, the tile improvement, this covers either option of either foregoing the open ditch and using a larger size tile, or once the tile size drops to a more economical, more money sense wise size, that would continue on up into the upper watershed to provide those newly annexed areas with a higher drainage coefficient than they had previously been receiving from the district. Along with, do you have anything to add? Okay. Along with that main tile also comes the possibility for branch tiles to serve other either landowner locked parcels or more impounded areas that had not seen a district facility. That is what Section 4 is. I believe there's up to from A to H,
J.
It's from A to J, the number of different proposed branch laterals that are proposed. Now, those would purely be on a landowner basis whether or not a landowner wanted or needed one of those facilities. And again, it's important to outline that only those that benefit from that facility would be responsible for the establishment, the upkeep, and any maintenance and or improvements in the future. So that is section 4. These were all outlined in our original report, and then from the last time till now with the amended report, section 5 was added to cover the west watershed of this district. It was noted by landowners that in heavy storms and in the past, water had traveled to the west out of the district before it made its way to the main open ditch of Grant 5. Upon field review, this is the case, and in larger storm events, there is the ability for water to leave the district. This is noted by the fact that there is actually a structure through the county road that at one time would have allowed water and does allow water to pass through that road. Additionally, there is an existing 18-inch tile that serves portions of the west watershed as well as crossing over into the upper watershed. So, the possibility of an increased tile to serve at today's standards was analyzed for the west watershed.
You want to bring up the next map?
I can, yeah.
That might show that a little better.
This outlines better the improvement options, and I apologize, it's a little difficult to see up on the screen. But I can try to...
Can you get the side panel of light?
So we can go all the way dark, if you want to go all the way dark for just a minute, but I'm going to need people not to get up if we're going to do that.
And strangely, could you point out where north is?
Yeah.
Yeah. North again is to the left of the screen.
I want to hit that light and just see if this is going to movie theater mode.
Let's see.
Yeah, like that.
Since our map, we would have had to have a lot more maps, I guess.
Okay. Now north is up. So. This is the upper watershed as before, the west watershed. These were the areas on the previous map that were shown in red. So the west main would run along this portion of the watershed, and there are actually a couple different options. It could stop and just serve this western watershed, or it could enter into Grant 5 as it exists and pick up this portion of tile and this portion of drainage that is also proposed.
We found that option to be a little more expensive, but it is an option.
Again, all these facilities being paid for and maintained only by those that benefit from them. So if water does not... If you happen to have water in Grant 5, but it doesn't flow to any one of these facilities, you would not be responsible for the payment of the construction of these facilities.
Is that sheet showing the landowner's pro rata, if you will, in the report?
In the report, we provided the option for the West Main looks at... It doesn't look at crossing into that upper watershed. It only looks at staying, providing the tile only in that west watershed. So we provided the cost estimate for that is in the report. However, we did consider, and we just did this recently, thinking that maybe something that people would want to consider is if that west main continued and crossed the roadway and then served that upper watershed as well. Our report assumed that the tile on the east watershed or the original main would continue all the way up and serve that upper watershed. And that cost estimate
To answer your question, though, the individual landowners per facility are not outlined in the report. We have those lists of people that would be benefited by a handful of the different improvement options, the larger of the improvement options. We do have those broken down. They're just not in the report. And we actually have those with us today as well. So if there was any question whether or not you were served by a facility, that could certainly be answered.
I would think that would be a primary question.
It is a primary question. It's just we don't have enough answers to get to generating that kind of data yet, right, until we decide where some of this is going. Okay.
So that's those are the options in a kind of in a nutshell there. Hand it back over to Kent to cover some of the, I don't know if you want to speak to Fort Women's advantages or costs.
Can I ask a clarifying question, just as we've been asked to answer the question of, in the report, it is listed, there's one cost listed for West Main Watershed, correct?
Correct.
And then there's another number right underneath it that says West Main Watershed and the Upper Watershed. So you can at least know the total gross for each of those.
You just want to know who paid for who.
Right.
Well, and to go one step further in this report and breaking out how many benefited acres they see in each one of these, not saying who the acreage belongs to, but I think you guys all have a pretty good idea of what's being served. And let's spend just a minute talking about this. So they said a couple times, you'll only pay for, if we move to this new system of doing it, which we've done in a couple of our drainage districts already, where you... It's not one total drainage district where everybody pays for everything. So right now in Grant 5, if we do work on the southernmost tip and we put some money in down there, everybody pays for it. And if we do work on the northernmost tip, everybody pays for it. And this would rearrange that to you're paying for the area that you use. And only the area that you use. Now, if you're all the way on the north end and you're using the entire facility, you know what? You're paying for everything that happens. You're paying your portion of everything that happens in there. But right now, it's everybody pays for everything, whether they're using it or not. Kent, you want to expand on that at all?
Yeah, correct. There'd be, for example, there'd be one schedule for the main open ditch. So anybody that benefited from the open ditch would be paying for that. Of course, that would be everybody on the east watershed and upper watershed would pay for work on the open ditch. Anybody, as if the west watershed goes through or has desires to proceed, they would not pay for the main open ditch, any work on that, because they don't use that main open ditch and would not. Same for the main east main tile. Only those that drain to the east main tile would be paying for that, and then the west main tile would have their own schedule, and each of the laterals would have each of theirs, and so on. I think you can kind of see where that's going. That's based on a number of different factors. One is wetness. How wet are your soils? We use soil types to determine that. Some soil types require more drainage than others. Your Okoboji's, of course, need more drainage than your Clarion Webster's. So there's factors assigned to all these different types of soil types. And then we look at use. How much of the facility do you use? If you're at the very bottom of the open ditch, you don't use very much of it. So you would have a very low factor for that. If you're at the very top of that open ditch or a very top of the district, you use all of the open ditch. So you would have a high factor, a factor of 100 based on that. Then you also have another factor that kind of offsets some of that use factor a little bit, and that's proximity. If you're right on the facility, you don't have to do much to get your water into it. So you have a high proximity factor. If the farther away you get,
you're going to need tile and whatever to get your water to that open ditch, for example. And so you're going to have a low proximity factor. We also look at runoff. Certain facilities create more runoff than others. Railroads, for one, with their ballast and those types of things have a high runoff factor. Roadways are, again, have a high runoff factor, so those are all taken into account. And all of these factors are multiplied times one another to come up with a benefited units of benefit, and then they are factored out according to your parcel as to what you would pay. That's essentially how reclassification works. Cost estimates, I want to go through the cost estimate a little bit here first. I urge you to look, if you have, anybody has this, and if you can bring this up, I don't know if you'll be able to see this at all up there. But we do have a summary, and I'm not going to get into too many numbers here, because it gets really burdensome. But the numbers you're probably most interested in is the cost per acre. For the open ditch repair, and that is only a repair, it's not an improvement. We're bringing the facility back to its original condition. We're dredging whatever silt is in the bottom, reshaping the slopes, taking care of the erosion, replacing the structures that are draining into the ditch that have eroded out and been eroded around, and taking care of all those problems for an average assessable cost per acre of about $49 per acre. Relatively low number, basically, because we have a large number of acres in the watershed. So that, if everybody's sharing in the cost, more people sharing in the cost, the lower that number is going to be.
But and I had a question there before you go on. So it looks to me like on the open ditch repair, you figure the entire 10,778 acres in that, but as I understand it, there's the possibility that we would pull almost 1,000 acres, 976, out of that and have it drained down the west side. How would that impact that number, or wouldn't it all pay for that?
This number assumed that west watershed was not draining in the year, and it does not. So they do not benefit from this ditch and do not pay.
Okay.
Keep in mind that this is an average number. People with the highest benefit could pay 2 to 3 times that $49. You have a question over here? Okay.
The guy next to the, you said 49, so the guy that has a drainage ditch through there that gets no benefit from the tile pays $100 an acre. The guy that's 5 miles away but water drains first is going to pay $10. If nobody understands that's how it works, it's completely backwards. That's how it's supposed to be.
I'm not sure I followed what you were stating there.
Where the drainage ditch, if you got a drainage ditch, goes through your farm, you got ground on each side, and he's saying $49, you're going to be assessed probably 3 times of 49. The guy that's at the top of the watershed that's just having tile dump into it, he's going to pay a $10 assessment versus the guy paying almost $100 assessment being by the drainage ditch.
And again, yeah, proximity is a factor, but there's a lot of factors. Keep in mind wetness. Those people on the top of the ditch are probably wetter than those. But it's hard to make a blanket statement like that. And I've never figured out which water goes first.
The highest level drains first. You go around and see which pond is the highest because that's the first water.
If we color coded it, I think. If you color-coded it red and yellow, I think we'd end up with whatever.
Well, we're not going to solve which water drains first, but we can talk about this for just a minute, because what we've seen, Ron, I told you we've had either 2 or 3 drainage districts in Story County where we've gone through this process of reclassification, right, where we look at every single parcel and reclassify it based on today's standards, using the five different factors that Kent laid out, including proximity, including how much of the facility you use, including wetness of soil. I can't think of the other two off the top of my head. And what we found, interestingly enough, is in our current system, the way it is today, you're 100% right. The one right on the ditch is paying much more. We're seeing that that flips just a little bit. What we just did over in Marshalltown, we actually saw the reverse of that be true. And again, it's based on five different factors, and proximity is just one of them. But we saw what I believe was a little more equity in terms of how people were being charged.
So you didn't, that really isn't the law. I mean, that's what they always told us in the past. You've got to change the law in the state legislature to get that changed. You can change that.
Through reclassification, we can go in and reclassify the benefit to each parcel based on these five factors. I mean, you think your head's spinning now. Wait till they start to go through these five factors that they lay out. But it's a really, what I found, and so everybody needs to understand this. I proposed to the state through DAVO, it's probably been 5 years ago now, that we just go, I thought, it was one of the first conversations Kent and I ever had. I thought, drainage district law, this is ridiculous. We're getting roomfuls of people that one person's paying X and the other person's paying Y, and they have the same number of acres. This is ridiculous. Everybody should pay the same amount per acre in a drainage district. And so went and proposed that at the State House and basically got run out of the State House on a rail. The Iowa Drainage District Association said, we've got 100 years of case law. What are you doing proposing something like this? You're out of your mind. Get out of here. But it was proposed. And what I found, and I'm just telling you my experience in working with Kent, is the most fair, equitable way to do this is exactly what we're going through now, where here it's 120 years old. Let's go in and let's spend the money to look at every single parcel again based on LIDAR technology. We get to see true elevations. We get to see how much of the facility we're using. We have a great mapping system of our area from Iowa State University in terms of what kind of soils we're draining. And I'm not saying it's going to make you happy when you see your bill at the end of the day, but it's based on math and mathematical formulas that are fairly applied to everybody. And I have actually embraced the system as a guy who was a complete skeptic early on.
In addition to that, we provide some color-coded maps that kind of shows how the specimens taper off from the facility and the like. And it's kind of interesting, I agree. I think once you go through that process, you'll understand reclassification a lot better. And
Rick, can I ask
appreciate
you?
It.
Yeah, Aaron.
This is a legal question. So you as a trustee are allowed to unilaterally change how this money is divided up amongst the holders, because doesn't that effectively change the value of everybody's land, give you the right effect to change the value of everybody's land?
So
before, when somebody had to pay 100, somebody had to pay 10, and the land traded hands, everybody knew what the rules were, and I valued the land based on the fact I got to pay 100, I got to pay 10.
Mm-hmm.
Now the land has already been bought, and everybody owns it. Now, does the trustee have the right to say, now we're going to change the rules?
That we're going to reclassify, yes, the trustees have the right to do that, and the landowners have the right to demand remonstrance. Is that what it's called?
The trustees have the right to order reclassification at any time they feel the existing schedule is inequitable. And as my recommendation, I think it's very obvious the existing schedule is very inequitable.
Well, we got over 1,000 acres draining into this thing that aren't paying anything right now.
1,900,
okay.
Yeah. So that alone would say that this reclassification has to occur, let alone we have 100 years of much better technologies to do that. And as you stated, it's very equitable. It's fair throughout the whole district.
But the answer to Eric's question is yes, we as the Drainage District Trustees have the right to do that.
Moving on to cost again. So that brings us to, we've combined the East Watershed tile improvement, which includes the main open ditch extension,
That cost is $576 average assessable cost. Now that would be for section 2B, which is the open ditch from Lincoln Way to 220th Street, and it includes the main tile all the way from 220th Street to the very upper portion of the watershed. Pretty reasonable cost, actually, compared to what we've seen for similar projects.
And so to underscore on 2B, you said $793,000, is that right, for 2B, but $415,000 of it would be borne by the railroad for the culvert?
Correct. The only cost to the district for 2B is $185,000. So that cuts your cost down substantially. And then
price per acre on that.
The price per acre, again, was $576 per acre. No, this would be the cost assessed to landowners because the cost for the railroad work would be paid by the railroad.
Thank you.
Then we went into all the branch tile improvements, again, A through J, and they varied from cost depending on the amount of water, how big a benefited area that tile served, of anywhere between
$104.78 is your lowest under those branch numbers.
On the far right?
Yeah, because I highlighted. They're branch.
Oh, there it is. There's 104. Thank you, Forrest. See that? $104 to $1,238. And again, that depends on the areas that are benefited. And we didn't know what private tiles are being served there, so it's a hard judgment for us to determine how necessary these are. So this is where the input from landowners comes on what they would like to do. And again, these could be done at any time. I think it's most important to get your main in and get you an outlet. Then the west main tile improvement. If the tile just served that west main area, the average cost per acre for that was $647 per acre. Again, that's a smaller watershed, so that price is a little bit higher.
Is it right, Kent, that 976 benefited acres largely are outside the district at this point?
Yes, they would all have to be annexed into the district.
Is there any benefit to the Grand Five landowners to see if, in fact, they could have another drainage district incorporated next to it, taking into account the annexation proposal and those acres are not in the district right now?
They could do that, and that was discussed somewhat at that last hearing, but that would require a petition and at least one owner. I think you'd want to have several landowners interested in that, and they would also need to post a bond to cover the cost of the report that would require.
Yeah, so let's talk through that just a minute. Here's the problem I see with that. So we know that right now those 1,900 acres are benefiting from the existing drainage district. And so, sure, we could go to those landowners and say, hey, how about creating your own drainage district and using this West Main ditch? But let's say that they don't. Where's their water going? It's coming right into Grant 5. And so it seems to me if they're benefiting from Grant 5 and have been benefiting from Grant 5, the most reasonable thing is to annex those people who are benefiting in Grant 5 into Grant 5 and then figure out what we're going to do with the water. And if that includes a West Main outlet, then it includes a West Main outlet. But it's the only way I see that we could guarantee to all of you that the people who are outside the district right now benefiting from the district will in fact come into the district and be part of this whole process. Am I seeing that right or wrong, Kent?
To me, it's kind of a combination thing. I think you have to figure out what do the people in the West Main want to do as before. I mean, obviously, you want to annex that upper portion, and we can do that without any comments from them if they do benefit.
As long as we can show they're benefiting, we can pull them into the district.
Yes, absolutely. But if the West Main wants to go up that way and serve that area, that would be something to consider now. However, I caution that that is more costly.
Yeah, Roger.
So that precludes a separate district for West Main.
Roger asked if that precludes a separate district from West Main. If we annex them into the district, Roger.
Instead of annexing.
It could be a separate district if you don't annex them, but it's a more costly, less certain process to do it that way than it is to annex them into Grant 5.
Yes, you would need somebody to post a bond to do that.
I look at it from a numbers standpoint here that about 20%, 1,900 acres, represents about 20% of what now we show are the acres benefiting. And so that's 20% of the people are getting a benefit without paying right now.
Is 20% of the land.
20% of the land, sorry, 20% of the land. So the other 80% are carrying that 20% right now. So that's one way I look at it.
Before we get into that decision process too much, I want to cover a few more things yet, and they're very important things. One is right-of-way, and the drainage district supply right-of-way along open ditches. That right-of-way is exempt from property taxes as well as drainage assessments, and it is used for ingress and egress for maintenance of the facilities. Under its original establishment, the drainage districts didn't normally have a very good record of what that width was. In fact, it's rarely ever stated in there what that width is. They typically gave an acre, or maybe not even that. They gave a cost of damages, what was paid to those landowners. So as part of this process and through the code of Iowa, it's allowed that we, as trustees, can set that right away as what it is currently. We are recommending that during construction they would have, of course, taken the area between the top of banks, but they would have also, to construct that, they would have needed an area about 20 feet on each side of the ditch. So we've estimated that width would be 80 feet. And the board can set that, and they can do that by resolution or by motion tonight at the end of the hearing. However, we are recommending, because we want to extend that open ditch as part of that tile improvement, we're going to need additional right-of-way, and we typically, most drainage districts, we set right-of-ways now at 100 foot wide. Bigger equipment, more right-of-way needed to maintain the open ditch. There's advantages to that. Again, property owners have the beneficial use of the right-of-way as long as they don't damage the facilities in that process. You can use that spoil pile area. You can plant up to the edge, but not over the edge. You can't be discounting in, and you can't be getting too close, because then you're damaging the facilities. Right away is an issue, and that will be handled at a separate hearing. But tonight, the board can set those right away widths at the recommended 80 feet at the end of the process here. Also, there are buffer strips along the open ditch. CRP buffer strips. The NRCS
has a contract with landowners on that. Our clean out of the open ditch, of course, and placing of the spoil would eliminate some of the grasses in that buffer strip. The individual landowners need to request a waiver from their Farm Service Agency county committeemen. And those county committeemen have typically provided a waiver for the drainage district to do that, as long as that ground is reseeded again at the end of the project. And that is done in the process of what is called a completion hearing. At a completion hearing, there will be other damages to crops, any planted crops, any unplanted crops, any compaction that occurs during the construction, and those are all paid to those landowners along where the work was performed. So we prepare a report at the end outlining all of the project costs. We will measure those areas of what was disturbed or where we believe there was damages, and then present that at a hearing. It's called the completion hearing, and you'll be notified just those landowners on whose the work was performed. So anybody along that open ditch, for example, or wherever the tile work was done, would be notified and given an opportunity to object to whatever damage was estimated. Farm program compliance. How many people here have a certified wetland determination? How many don't know? How many don't care? Well, I'm not seeing a lot of hands that go up in any of those responses there. But it's important to have a certified wetland determination. And I think this individual brought that to our attention earlier today or tonight that NRCS, he said they wouldn't let him improve his drainage. Well, drainage districts have the right to do their drainage. However, the NRCS will consider all farmed wetlands that you have to be converted. They will automatically assume that. It is your job to prove them wrong. Okay? So hopefully nobody has any wetlands in this room. But that is unlikely. So,
in the 1812 topographic maps around here, the main feature is about 80% of the land was swamp.
Yep, which absolutely is why we have drainage districts. That's exactly right.
Right. So there's a lot of drainage going on back then, and thank goodness, or we wouldn't have the economy of Iowa that we do now. But anyhow, there are options to address that. First, I'm going to request through the board that everyone provide a wetland determination to us, our firm, because we need to know who has a farmed wetland and where that is located, because the drainage district has an interest in knowing where that is, because if we go ahead and do an improvement and your wetland is considered converted, you're thrown out of the farm program, you're going to have to pay penalties, you likely will have to pay a lot of benefits back and won't have any Farm Service Agency payments in the future. Nobody wants that. So it is very important that you provide those wetland determinations. The other thing is that what I'm going to propose and what I proposed in the report is that the drainage district participate in any wetlands and wetland mitigation that might be needed. What has been done in some districts is that, well, there is mitigation available in the Iowa Mitigation Bank, and that goes for about $12,000 an acre. These wetlands that are converted have to be mitigated both in acre for acres and all functions and values. and there's a complicated process of figuring that the NRCS does to determine how many acres of mitigation you may need. If you have 1 acre of wetland, for example, you may need 1.2 acres in mitigation sometimes, depending on your values that are being converted. I'm going to ask the board later tonight, too, if there is an improvement that is approved, that they determine how mitigation and how wetlands are handled within the district. They can say, everybody, you're on your own. You take care of your own wetland. We're going ahead with this project. That is a possibility. You can say, well, I have a farm wetland. It's over in the corner, far corner of my field, and I really don't care about it. I'm just not going to farm it. That's a possibility, too. And if the project, if for some reason our project moves forward faster than the mitigation moves forward, that would still be a temporary solution as well. Even if it's in the middle of your field, you can opt to not plant it. So there's some obstacles, but I think they are very doable, or we can handle those as well. The other thing is we will need, because of the open ditch extension, there will be need to be applications, joint applications made both to the DNR and Corps of Engineers for approval for that, as well as any local permits that are necessary. We would go through that process. It's a bit time-consuming, but again, I don't see any issues with that.
And in fact, we just did one in Richland 20. So you can talk to Ray Lounsbury or Steve Henry or Ron Hewen on that process and how it worked for them.
Okay. It went rather well there, but again, somewhat time-consuming. The other point I want to cover is about water quality. I want to touch a little bit on a lot of times there's a misconception that tile drainage increases flooding. I've heard that many times, and that's really a misconception. Based on a University of Iowa water study, they found that the tile drainage can actually decrease the flooding for some storms. Again, the larger storms, the 100-year floods, the 50 to 100-year floods, there's so much water coming down. Your tiles really have no effect on that. But the smaller storms, your tiles are draining continually, and it's the sponge effect. I don't know if you've heard that. If you consider your tile as a sponge, that if you have it well drained, when you do get a rain, it's going to be able to absorb that rain rather than run off right away. You all know how if you have the first 3-inch rain usually drains pretty well, but then it's the next one that fills the ponds, right? So I wanted to touch on that. Also, there's a lot of interest in nutrient reduction. There's a lot of things that we as individuals can do to help reduce the nitrates in our tile water. Certainly that's a big issue and a big big highlight in the state now, that we all want to do all that we can individually, especially cover crops and reduce tillage and bioreactors are all very viable options. We looked at some of the things that the district could do. Not a lot of very good options, particularly on where things are located. Created some large obstacles to that. However, there was one thing that I thought
seem reasonably doable, and that's what's called a WASCOB. It's like saying that. It's a water and sediment control basin. What it is, and I don't know if you can bring up that slide of that, it's essentially a standpipe on the end of a culvert that drains into the open ditch. It allows for water to pond there just for a short period of time and then drain away before the crops are damaged. It allows for some sediments to drop out of that first flush of storm water and then slowly drain away. And you can see the intake on that pipe, that riser pipe there. Would allow the once it gets so full, of course, then it drains into that the smaller flows would drain through the rock and into the tile and out into the open ditch. If there's interest in that, we can pursue and see if we can get some funding options for that. I would expect there would be people willing to provide some funding for that. We have not actually done that yet.
Kent, this is probably a good spot in the presentation and agenda to, if we've got people from the Nature Conservancy, the Iowa State University, or Department of Ag to talk about this, now would be a great time. Did we get anybody from any of those? Yes, sir. Come on up. Start by introducing yourself, please. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, my name is David Geis. I'm working as director for the Nature Conservancy. We'll get closer to your mouth.
All right.
And I don't want to take up too much of your time. How much time?
Just take what you need. If you start to ramble, I'll.
All right. I know you got a lot of things on your plate here to talk about. It involves a lot of money and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things I did want to bring to your attention that there is an opportunity here with this revamp of this project. I'm part of some groups. One of them is called Transforming Drainage. It's the land grants of the Upper Midwest are looking at sort of the next generation of drainage technologies. There's also another group called Ag Drainage Management Coalition. And Dan Jeans, here, Dan, I'm going to push on the spot, is with Agricultural Research Service and the National. The really cool about this thing about this project is it's right next door to the finest land grant institution in the United States. And so I'm not a state grant. And Dan is one of the people who works with the Agricultural Research Service there. And their lab has been doing a lot of work with drainage. And there's some drainage technologies that can increase your yield. By 20-30% or even more, above and beyond, getting from an eighth of an inch drainage coefficient to a half an inch. That in itself is going to be a great benefit, I think, to yield. But there are some other things you can do, and we don't have time to talk about it tonight, but also Dr. Matt Helmer's over at the engineering school there. He's a drainage engineer. He's a member of these two groups that I mentioned. And so there's a lot of thought and a lot of research going into developing different drainage systems that can increase yield and reduce nutrient outflow. And right now, a lot of these tile systems are losing maybe 30% of their nitrogen that's put on. And, if the co-op showed up with a truck and the gate was open, they're delivering your fertilizer, you lost 30% on the road, you'd be really pissed off. But the same thing's going on with drainage systems, and there are ways to keep that from happening. And so these groups that I work with are advancing technologies along those lines. There's also some very interesting sensor technology coming on board. It's the guys at Iowa State that have it's probably going to come out in a year or so, sensors that you can actually read real-time what your nitrate levels are in corn stock and soil. And they're going to be far cheaper than what has been in the past. I mean, you get these sensors for $25,000 now, but they're talking about a few hundred dollars for sensors. So there's all this stuff going on, and the right next door to Iowa City. And I guess we'd like to talk to you about the opportunities to create special projects and things. I mean, there's probably grant dollars available. Another thing we're interested in looking at is impact capital. There may be private investors that are willing to provide capital in return, I guess, for conservation benefits, public benefits, that sort of thing. But I guess we'd like to continue the conversation about that. This is not something we can decide tonight. But just wanted to make you aware of the opportunities that are available out there, especially since you're, I mean, right next door to Iowa State and the ARS lab. We've already talked with ARS and Iowa State folks, and they'd be more than happy to, visit with you some more about this. But as you're planning this project, I think it opens up lots of opportunities to think about other systems, you know, sort of state-of-the-art drainage systems and those sorts of things. So I don't want to take up too much of your time. But Dan, do you have anything that you'd like to comment on or not?
You are pretty good. What's going on? Thank you. Yeah, I'm Dan James with the ARS lab in Ames, Iowa, and we do work with Iowa State quite a bit on drainage issues, looking at drainage programs. The one thing I think that they left out here is we like to call it smart drainage. So we know when you put a pipe in the ground, it's kind of dumb drainage where the water is going to flow anytime you want. We're working on systems now that we like to call smart drainage where you not only can, where you manage your drainage, you manage that. Spending on the climate to actually increase yields. And so if there's any interest in these kinds of concepts, again, like Dave said, just give us a call or whatever, and we'd like to continue that conversation with them.
I've got some cards that come up to me afterwards, or I'd be happy to hand out. We'll follow up with you on that. But, yeah, I think while you're redoing this, I mean, the time to do these sorts of things is when you're developing new systems like you are here. So if you're laying new tile, now's the time to think about it, I guess. So that's just what the idea we want to be with you tonight.
That's outstanding. And so appropriate for us to talk about, but let's be really, really clear here in the different hats that the three of us wear up here, right? So as your Board of Supervisor members, we're highly interested in water quality. We're highly interested in nitrates and things like that. In fact, Story County is getting ready to become the first county in the state of Iowa to have assessed 100% of our watersheds. I mean, we take that really, really seriously. But take that hat off and put the Drainage District Trustee hat on. Our responsibility up here in front of you tonight is simply to drain the ground. As much as we care about the water quality and what's coming off the fields and everything else, that's not our responsibility in this role, but we want you guys to hear the message, because as private landowners, you know, you guys are making the right decisions for your ground every single day. So thank you very much for being here, and thank you for sharing
the message. This would be separate from what I could collaborate with, but it would be a separate thing from what you're talking about tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Kent, anything further as part of your report before we start to hear comments from landowners?
I just did my report. I had annexation and reclassification. I think we covered all of that pretty well already. The annexation would be, again, a separate hearing on that process. The reclassification would have a separate hearing as well. So you all, the code is really set up very well for landowner input. I mean, it focuses highly on the ability of landowners to give their input on what is happening, and that's why we have all these hearings, but it's also why things drag on, seem very, very slowly. But that's about all I had. I guess I could summarize some recommendations that we had, but...
Let's do that. Let's do that after we get. So what's happening now is we're going to hear comments, and we're going to have a discussion about what we've heard tonight. We're going to talk about the five different pieces they laid out for us, right? The existing open ditch. We're going to talk about the proposed new section of open ditch, or I think you said 54-inch tiling between Lincoln Way up to 220th. We're going to talk about the idea of the main tile improvement north of 220th. We're going to talk about these different branches, which in my mind needs to be lesser on our conversation tonight because that is really specifically impacting certain landowners and more for a conversation for them. And then finally, this idea of the West outlet, the West Branch outlet. So we've got those five items to talk about tonight, and then based on that conversation, the trustees will determine whether to accept the engineer's report and where we go from here, what the process is going to look like going forward. And we'll start right here with you, sir.
Before we get into that, I was curious about the engineering report. What method are you using to estimate this? Is this from government standards?
It's an estimate based on previous projects that we've worked on. So I guess I don't know that I can give. We like to land in the middle of where the bids fall, is what I would say. I don't want to be. I'm certainly not to be the low bidder, but I'm not going to be the high bidder either.
I think this number is plus or minus 50%, plus or minus 30%.
I could say as much as 10 to 20% depending on final design.
The last two projects we did, so the best way I know to answer that, were both plus minus 10%.
Okay, and the other question
right?
I had is...
Could you use the mic, please? Because we're recording this. Thank you.
So my other question is, the non-construction costs, how are they divvied up between the county versus the private land? You've got discussion private land, county road, and the non-construction costs, how are they divvied up?
Those costs are all paid for by the private landowner. Because they are necessary either way, whether there's a roadway through there, whether there's a railroad through there, we're happy that they're paying for their construction costs. Is typically how it is.
Okay, they would pay based on their assessment as well.
That's true. Yeah, they are all assessed because they all have property. In the district, and they pay a higher percentage based on their higher runoff.
Yeah, the answer is everybody pays for those costs. Just imagine that at the very bottom of the district that everybody's using, that's divvied up among everybody, including the public entities.
Yeah. Great. Thanks.
Anything
else?
The cost that you're stating.
Hi, Angie. I didn't see you come in.
The costs that you're stating are one time as opposed to ongoing assessments, correct?
That is correct. These are total costs that these average total costs that I gave earlier were one time. However, landowners do have the right, based upon the code, to pay those costs over between 10 to 20 years. 20 being the maximum. I am recommending in my report and to the board that be allowed up to 20 years. And that is decided on a case-by-case, district-by-district basis. Based on the board's decision.
Yeah, well, there's two decision points there, right? The trustees make a decision of whether they'll offer it, and if so, for how long. And then each individual landowner makes a decision with that first tax bill how they're going to do it. You either pay it all right then, or you split it up over the however many years it's allowed.
And the interest rate is set as well.
Right.
And that is currently at 6%.
Mm-hmm. Which we just, the way that works is we don't have the money sitting there to pay for anything like this, so the contractor ends up receiving
warrants,
and they're the ones receiving the interest, and it's steep. But it's the only way we can get them to receive, to accept them.
It encourages everybody to get their own financing, and if you can get it at a cheaper rate.
Oh, back in the back. And let's get the microphone back there. Morris is right. We're recording. Just since we're recording, even if we're able to hear you, the tape won't tape.
The project over on the Marshall County, Story County line.
Yes, sir.
You know, we were told that was going to be a low-interest loan, and I never heard the amount until afterwards. And low interest was 7% on that thing, right?
Six.
Six?
6%. Yeah, and that's all set in a public meeting. I'm sorry you never heard it. I don't know how you never heard it, but that is part of a public meeting that rate is set, and we've been 6% at everything we've done in story.
I had sticker shock because mine was 3 times what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. Mine was almost $300 an acre.
Yep.
We're not on the ditch.
Right. Oh, yeah. So the Marshall is a great example. There's a project that's Marshall Story 1. That's draining the eastern part of Story County over into Marshall County. And it was a project. It's a much smaller district than we're talking about here, but much more impactful to the landowners because you got fewer landowners with fewer acres paying in, albeit a smaller project. What was that? The total project was 800 and some thousand. It was somewhere in the 800,000.
Close.
Yeah. But much more impactful to each landowner and each acre. Other questions or comments? Yeah, Eric.
Can I clarify a question about right-of-way? So you mentioned that there will be an 80-foot right-of-way around an open ditch.
Could you hold it up a little bit?
Yeah, 80-foot right-of-way around an open ditch. And on that right-of-way, I can do anything but plant a corn. Is that correct?
No, that's not.
Go ahead, Ken.
No, that's not true. You can plant corn in the right of way.
I thought you said I couldn't.
Landowners have the beneficial use of that right of way. You can plant corn, you can seed it to CRP. One thing you probably can't do is put a building there that you want to keep for very long. Mm-hmm.
But if the county needs to maintain the ditch where you plant it,
yeah, we'd pay no crop damages if we went in and had to do something in the ditch and destroy those crops.
Yeah, if and when the district does not have to pay crop damages for that area. You know, some that have.
Mm-hmm. Other questions or comments?
I'm not sure which parts you're talking about annexing, but I had a question, I guess, that maybe these guys can address is how, when they did this 100 years ago, were they not able to ascertain that this was going to be beneficial now, 100 years later?
What's your thoughts? You want to talk?
Yeah. Well, you can tell me how they legally done it, and I'll tell you why it's changed.
Well... Yeah, it's hard to know what things happened over 100 years ago. Particularly this upper portion. Sometimes I've found that I think that they intentionally left people off because if they would have included them, they were highly objectionable to the project and they wouldn't have got the district established.
Isn't there records from back then of
He's asking if there's records from 120 years ago.
Very limited.
We're happy that we have some maps that give us general ideas of where tiles are. The other thing I would say is you got I-35 that's different in there. Clearly we know that we used to have at least surface drainage that ran down that west side that doesn't run down that west side anymore. Rod, take it. I mean, you know the history of all of that.
Well, I kind of wonder, maybe a lot of people in here don't even know how this all got started. So that was kind of one of the first things that I guess you don't know how to assume. But at the start of this, when you look at assuming drainage districts were all done right when they started this, which I've never seen one of them line was wrong yet when they did them 100 years ago or 120 years ago. Grant 5 stopped where the water stopped running when they did Grant 5. And now the water that's 1,000 acres above never did come into Grant 5. That's changed as farming practices and people have done things maybe they shouldn't. Things you don't know why it did. 93 was a big one when you had all the rain. There's too many things down to everybody's memory that weren't there we don't know. The one thing we do know, the water did not come down here originally. Well, we can say 10% did, 25% did in a 5-6 inch rain, but it definitely is not. Now it's 100%.
Right.
And As an example, this spring was a dry spring. We had no big rains. 100% of the water coming into Grant 5 was coming from outside of the district. We never had one rain where any surface water was enough to use any of the waterways going to Grant 5. It was all from tile boiling up that was plugged through pedals and marsh through the west 18-inch dock, of which that's why the bridge was there. The majority of this water went west. If you don't believe me, I've got a map from 1939, the first aerial photo that ASC office did when the farm program started. It shows you where the water is.
There's a reason there's a bridge there.
There's a reason there's a bridge there. Unless the culprit besides it was that tile. And in the way the tile from Grant 5 goes up to the watershed and stops. There's a little bit where it crossed the fence, and that's exactly where the water line was drawn, where the district was drawn. So the water, the tile line, 18 inches, they clean through pedals to marsh to the west, coming up, comes down the road and goes in and curves and goes up into this 1,000 acres. That's where it originally designed, because that's how the water originally come. They weren't wrong. Now we're changing all this. The thing that I said, I thought when I heard it, I understood one of the first sentences, whether it was you or you said it, Rick, your obligation as the township trustee is to maintain the water district as it was. And the water district as it was didn't have the water coming down there.
Yeah, let me rephrase that. It's our obligation to maintain the flows as it was, the capacity as it originally was. The reality for us, I think everything you just said, I agree with, right? But we have to deal with what we have today, not how we got here over the last 50 to 70 years. And the reality is we've got flows from 1,900 acres that we didn't have and didn't build for that we've got to account for now.
Well, and I think that Dennis and I, we've talked about everybody out there that knows the situation being on the farm, or the farms in question where all this happens. We've seen it. Nobody wants to stop somebody from granting their farm. It's just a matter of where it goes.
Right.
It's a huge cost difference to how it's done and how it's efficient. And it takes a lot less people involved if you get it back how it originally was to start with. That's when you start changing the lay of the land. And one of the biggest things that you have to realize today, between Ames and the Bay, that Dennis was pointing out today, you've got the railroad track that is a huge dam by the grade that they built for that railroad track. You've got three places for that water to exit. And they keep shoving more and more into Grant 5, and that's the artificial one. West Indian Creek is a natural one, and the creek that goes under by the
Rilla
is a natural one. Both of those are deeper grades to install the tile to get more depth on it. And those are deeper because that's where all water went at one time.
Where it was supposed to be.
They had to correct the drain with farming practice to come around when they made the drainage ditch in Grant 5 and form that district. So now, you know, we keep shoving more and more. The veins getting in here and the veins with their annex and everybody is putting more load and getting extremely tremendous in years to come. Now's the time to get put back to original, take that 1,000 acres to the north, and it needs to go west. That's how they want it, get their own tile in. And you're going to have a lot more depth and a lot better system, and I'll say at a lot less cost.
Yeah, well, that's what Branch 5, that's what Part 5 of this does.
It's not just north. There's a lot of work they have to come up with.
Absolutely, and where Ron just got us is where we ended a year ago, right? We went through the process. We received the engineer report a year ago. We had this exact conversation, and that's when the trustee said, hold on, we need to go back in and look at all of this again. And that's what Kent and Tyler have done and looked at pulling those 1,000-plus acres, depending on how far north you go there on the west side, where it's draining down that west side.
Well, I think that goes back to him. It's like what Dennis and I were talking about from the city of Ames standpoint, from the city of Nevada, everybody, and for future, you don't spend the most money here because it might not be what's going to address it. We need to get the water going back to the original creek where it started from, because we're just going to have a total disaster coming down.
And so I don't want to put words in your mouth, so you help me if I'm missing this. I'm hearing you say we need to do Section 5 for sure, which is that west, get that property flowing down the west side. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Well, that's what I'd say. Get it up through there. And if anybody understands soil maps or how all this was done, if you go into the question mark,
the questioned area where this water started coming this way. There was a clarion ridge that came across there. That clarion ridge and the waterway is gone. Clarion is not the bottom. That's not a bottom soil. That's the top of the ridge. And it's gone. You can see where the two connected. That's where it all left. The map I got from 1939 shows a lot of this stuff. Everything was farmed in 40-acre pieces back then. You didn't have any fields. There was a fence there right at the same thing. And when the fence came out, there was no waterway there in 1939. Now it's, you know, down to the Mississippi River. And that's, you know, it's just things, times have changed over nobody's fault. It's just how things went. And, you know, it's just, you could put a 5-foot berm or 3-foot, whatever that is, get whatever percentage of water that's back west where it went to. And we only got the big, huge rains in the Grand High.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it originally was years ago.
And flowed right by your homestead. Back in the back, I said Randy was up, and then we'll come back to
Scott, the project. Can we get the lights back up? Oh.
Let me clarify one thing first. In our report, that West Main cost is for a tile that that stays on the west side of that north-south road. You understand that?
Yeah.
Everybody understand that?
And flows to the existing stream that runs just to the east of Barilla right now.
Correct.
Yes.
That upper watershed, based on our cost estimate and our preliminary plan, will be drained to the east main, what I call the east main tile.
Yeah. Randy.
Yeah. One thing, Rick, that you said that concerned me,
yep.
It tossed out a red flag with stormwater.
Okay. Yep.
Going along with what Ronnie is saying, we need to account for what's going to happen in the future, in the near future, with this industrial area that's going to be set up, that's going to be draining in that ditch. Or we need to take it less.
Yeah,
we need to set it up right, or Ronnie's exactly right. We're going to be in deep hoolah, and you're going to be taking that ditch, and you're going to be wiping that ditch out all the way down south.
Absolutely, and I don't think I said stormwater, but stormwater is definitely said. But we got Tracy, I don't want to put you on the spot, but we got Tracy Warner from the city of Ames here tonight. I'm actually going to tell you guys this, and this may not be a real popular remark in here, but it is actually to the benefit of Grant 5 that Ames has annexed through that portion, because their standards for runoff and retention and slowing things down is much greater than anything we can do as trustees, because we're required by law to move the water on. Ames has put some really cutting-edge practices into retaining. You want to talk a little bit about what you guys' plans are for that area of Ames that now is in Grant 5?
Sure. I can talk about, utilities and stormwater. So then I can answer any questions and then stick around afterwards. So I'm Tracy Warner, I'm the Municipal Engineer of the Public Works Department. What we have planned for the East Industrial area is to extend water main and sanitary sewer service out so that the industrial developments could connect to those utilities. Obviously, we want to make sure that the sewage is going in the right direction. And that would all be treated by the City of Ames, so it would go down to our wastewater treatment plant. The stormwater regulations that Rick mentioned, in April of 2014, the City of Ames adopted a new post-construction stormwater management ordinance, and we don't only consider water quantity, so flood control, but we also consider water quality and make requirements for them to treat the nutrients and remove those nutrients and sediments from the sites. And we prefer them to be in best management practices that use like vital retention cells or permeable pavements, or sometimes they do use underground storage facilities. Obviously, all the stormwater basins that you've been seeing around Ames, those are practices as well as the native vegetation. So this ordinance for a flood control, some of you may be familiar with a pre-developed versus a post-developed condition. So looking at an existing runoff conditions, what would come off of the ag field now, we take it a step further and we have it be back to what's considered a meadow in good condition. So something where the historic landscape of Iowa was more of a sponge and was absorbing that. So it is further reducing the runoff than even what would be coming off now. So as areas are developed out there, they may do an individual site. They could do a regional facility if there's a larger clustering of developments as a park or something like that. So they would have a lot of options that way, but they would have to meet our requirements. There's also requirements for considering soils. There's considering the stream buffers, waterways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would just say this: Ames requirements. So think of the area where the open ditch stops, and we go north to the UP from Lincoln Way. What happens when we get a heavy rain event right there, Randy? I mean, you live right over there. You drive by it all the time. I mean, it backs up and it fills up right there, and then it drains across Lincoln Way down to Highway 30 as fast as it can. And the City of Ames requirements are actually going to slow down how fast the water that hits that area can leave that site because of their requirements over what's there now.
Okay, can...
And I'll repeat it. Go ahead.
Can a company ask for a waiver?
Right now, the only ability for a waiver is if they were to do a combination of meeting the requirements or doing that as a combination of an on-site and off-site, but something improved within the watershed. So overall, they would still have that equivalent of meeting the ordinance.
Mm-hmm. Good. Got okay. Tracy, do you want to spend any more time on City of Ames, and then brief? But
I do. One of the newly annexed areas, and I've exchanged some emails, so I appreciate. Hence time, but one of the areas on that west tile line I do want to mention that is an area of regional commercial zone area, and so that would have just the same requirements that I was talking about just recently with the east industrial, so that would significantly reduce the runoff in that area as well, both north and south of East 13th Street. I do also have concerns with that tile line because we have a 12-inch water line that goes right through there that does loop our drinking water system. So I have concerns with those elevations and also some elevations with our sewer and water that we're bringing out along Lincoln Way as far as tile versus ditch and those elevations as well.
Absolutely.
That water line has not been good for the tile.
Okay.
So, Tracy, I have a copy of that communication that you had with Kent. And the way I read your questions and then Kent's responses were that we would be able to work with the City of Ames, though, right? That the questions and issues you bring up can be coordinated from the engineers to help address issues for those, right?
I think that there's a lot more communication that would need to happen. I think there's a lot more questions, a lot of the engineering finite details, also the impacts on those that would develop in the area. Obviously, we were not able to get some specific cost per acre impacts, and so from an economic development standpoint, we really want to be able to have more information that way to be able to talk with people that are coming to the city of Ames in that area. We also want to make sure that we're not like enlarging this ditch, assuming we're going to have this huge amount of runoff from industrial development, when that is not the case, because it will reduce the flow. So I do want to make sure that a lot of these finite details were considered as well.
Yeah, and so that we're clear there, at least for me, it's my expectation that for the water that falls on that property, we're gonna do better than we're doing right now. But we still got to figure out how to get the water from the north through the property to the south, whether that's an open ditch or a 54-inch tile or whatever it is. We got to figure out how to get that done in the most reasonable way possible. And I know you agree with that.
Right, and as well, the development. We don't know if they're going to happen tomorrow or they're going to happen in 10 years, so that is also something to consider. We do also have John Holm here, so with Ames Economic Development, and maybe he has a few words on that aspect.
Outstanding. Thanks. John. Thanks for being here tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate Tracy with all the comments that she had for the Prairie View Industrial Center. We officially named it. It's no longer the Eastern Industrial Organization, but it's Prairie View Industrial Center. I got to get it out there as often as I can. So I think that in looking at this, I think we have a major concern with Section 2. With how that's going to impact what we are doing out here. We have the City of Ames, as well as some other groups and entities, put forth considerable resources, and we're continuing to put forth considerable resources into marketing this area. And Section 2, with the right-of-way that it would eat up and where that land lies, cuts right through the middle of what we see as the most valuable piece of property up there for industrial use. So I just want to voice that concern. I don't know alternatives or anything like
sure.
that.
Sure. Well, the only thing I would point out, John, is we have an existing tile running through there right now, so you're already dealing with, in terms of development, you're already dealing with some of those concerns now.
The water flows over.